Hello and welcome to the PK Soccer Youth Coaching Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Kelshaw. In today's episode, I am joined by Martin Paul. Martin is a former professional footballer from Bristol, England, and he holds a UEFA A license from the English FA. In today's episode, we talk about Martin's transition from player to coach, including his various coaching positions in academy football. We also talk about his role and development as the head of academy at the Tyrone Mings Academy in Bristol, England. Hi, Martin. Thank you for joining me today. How are you doing?
Yeah, great. Thanks for you.
I'm doing very well. Thanks. Really appreciate you taking the time to speak to me today. But first,
no problem.
If you could give me a brief introduction of how you got into coaching since you stopped playing.
Yeah, of course. I probably started dabbling a little bit in coaching towards the end of my playing career, which would have been with Bath City. So that would have been, 2009, 2010. Bath are playing in the, or were playing in the one below the conference, whatever step that is. I can't quite, not got quite sure. Got involved a little bit there towards the end, kind of player coaching. And then when I retired, gave up and had nothing to do with football for 2-3 years. And then, like a lot of people, I got back into it because my son started playing. Took my son along, and then when they found out that I had a, you know, for want of a better phrase, kind of a playing background, and they said, you know, do you want to help out? Can you get involved? I kind of got into it that way. So up until that point, I had no ambitions or no real thought about, you know, going into coaching. I was quite happy to have a break and just stand on the touchlines and watch, you know, my son play. But then the local club in Bristol where we were at, they sort of like volunteered to pay to put me through. And I ended up skipping the level one. So my first one was the FA level two. And then it went from there, really.
So that seems quite lucky, really, that a local like grassroots amateur club would pay for you to do such a qualification.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's part of, so again, in the UK, we've got, I think it's the FA Standard Charter. So every club that signs up to that, you've got to have all of your coaches minimum, you know, level one or going through it. They've got to be DBS checked. They've got to do first aid. They've got to do safeguarding, which is exactly how it should be. And I think the level two back then might have been £150 or something along those lines. So yes, an amount of money, but not a huge amount. So I got myself booked onto that. Ironically enough, given what followed, because I did obviously B&A after that, the level two was the most uncomfortable that I've ever been on a course. Felt massively out of my depth just with the technique skill game and the element of how you kind of went through, and everything that I did was far too many cones, far too many interventions, far too complicated. And the chap that was on my course was a fellow called Nigel Quincy, that's still heavily involved in coach education locally now. He just used to rip all of my stuff up and just go, no, rubbish, no, do this, right, now go and coach. So he obviously knew that I could do it, or he felt I could do it, but I was just, I don't know, trying too hard to impress or overthinking it. And, yeah, you know, it was I was the only ex-pro on the course, because through all of my courses, I paid for them and went through the local FAs.
Okay.
So I didn't go through the ex-pro or the PFA route. So, managed to do the level two, got recommended to go onto the B license, and got accepted onto the first B license that I could get on. Same thing with that, finished the B, was on my kind of coach tutor plan to try and book onto an A. Was lucky enough to get accepted onto the first A license that I applied for, ended up passing the A in early 2017. That was, yeah, four and a half years from starting the two to finishing the A, which was the quickest you could do it. And that wasn't because I was desperate to do it in the shortest amount of time. Okay. Because while I was doing my level two, I was, and my B license, I was coaching and I was out 7 nights a week. I was helping in grassroots. I was working in the JPL, which is a league in the UK that helps bridge the gap between academy football and grassroots football. And then when I first started and I first got my B, I was in the academy world as well. So I'm a huge believer in, yes, you need your qualifications, but you need as much time out on the grass or the AstroTurf with players, different ages, different sexes, different abilities. The more you can do, the more hours, the more coaching you can do, the better and more rounded you're going to be. It's like anything in life. So,
were you also working full time while you were working with your son's team and the academies?
Yeah. So again, I was lucky enough. I'd set my own business up, which was construction recruitment. So I'd done that during the day. And then height of kind of the recession over here, kind of 2009-10-ish, I'd set my own business up. So yeah, I did have a full-time job, but I worked for myself, which kind of afforded me the luxury of the time and perhaps the finances to be able to go in and do this. The irony is at that time, the main goal was to kind of end up doing what you yourself did. We wanted to up and move to the States as a family, get kind of and have a lifestyle change and come out to America and get involved in the coaching. When Trump beat Clinton at whatever years that was now, 4 or 5 years ago, and he changed the visas, then my A license got me in, but my wife and my two kids, or the two girls, because my eldest is across in America on a scholarship, a soccer scholarship, it closed the, not the loophole, but it closed the opportunity for them to come with us. So they'd have had to have come over on a holiday visa.
Right.
And 9 months down the line, you got to leave the country for a few days. You can come back in on another holiday visa if you get in. Great for them. But they couldn't go to a school. My wife wouldn't have been able to have worked, and she's an ex kind of, you know, Great Britain gymnast. So she was hoping to kind of go down either the gymnastics or the cheerleading type route.
Yeah.
So we were kind of stuck with, oh, we're going to sell everything and up and leave the UK and come out to America and then get kicked out due to, you know, work permits or visas. So we didn't go down that route in the end. It was a case then of using the qualifications, and I got myself into the academy setups in the UK.
Because you were you briefly off air, we were talking about how you had tried to go back to your old club, Bristol Rovers.
Yeah.
You just tell the listeners a little bit about that and how then you got involved with Bristol City.
Yeah, so I'm quite fortunate, I guess, because I'm not from Bristol. So I played for Rovers, but I wasn't a Bristol boy. I came out of Somerset. So anybody, I guess, like in most major cities, that's only got two teams. You're either red or you're blue in Bristol. There isn't any sitting on the fence. There isn't any in between. And families are divided and all sorts. So at the time, my best friend, Marcus Stewart, was working for Bristol Rovers. He might have been first team coach or professional phase coach. And he'd mentioned that the academy was always asking or needing to get ex-players back involved with the academy. So I approached Bristol Rovers and said, look, I played for you from 11 to 21, 22. I'm going through my B license. Can I work for you for free in your academy setup? You'd have seen me work. So by the time I pass my B, if you think I'm worthy of being offered a job to work in your academy, then great, offer me a job and I'll accept. And they went, oh, no, we can't do that, or we don't want to do that, or whatever the answer was. The answer was no, anyway. So I'd offered to work for free as an ex-player with 90% of the qualification that I needed to be able to work, and they said no. At the same time, I'd done my youth modules, and one of the tutors on the youth module was a chap called Gareth Jennings. Gareth was joining Bristol City as their head of coaching, I think it was, or head of academy, one or the other. And Gareth phoned me and said, I'm going to get this job. Have you passed your B license yet? And I said, well, no, not quite. And they said, all right, okay. He phoned me back. He said, I've spoken to the tutors. You're going to pass. Do you want a job? And it was as simple as that, really. So I'd offered the club I'd been with for 10, 11 years to work for free. They said, no. The opposite side of the city that, you know, you should never work for, if you're one, whichever way round it is, you should never entertain setting foot in the other. But because they turned around and said, yeah, we want you, can you come in? This is what we want you to do. I was fortunate. I didn't have to. I didn't have a job in. Had an interview in terms of a face-to-face interview, but I didn't have to do a session interview.
Yeah.
Because Gareth had seen me over 4 days on a youth module.
Right.
Which was classroom and grass-based and all sorts of different stuff. So he'd seen me. He'd seen me coach, and we'd had conversations around philosophies and all the rest of it. So yeah. So I would have joined Bristol City in what would have been, I guess, kind of 2000. The 14-15 season.
So that's a bit of a kick in, well, literally a bit of a kick in the teeth then from Rovers to do that. But then it's very cliche, if one door shuts or slams, then you know, another one opens. And it's the fact that you're you could have packed it in and been frustrated with that decision, but it's also as a good thing as well, in a way that you never burn any bridges. I'm sure you were just, you were polite, you were just, or you just ignored their response. Yeah. And then it leads to another opportunity based on starting at the basic level, or starting with those early FA licenses, and that's somebody spotting you. There's so many, there are so many coaches that get an opportunity from someone that they meet or someone that they get along with on a coaching course. I know we've all benefited from, as we are now, from like online interactions and webinars and Zoom calls, but we the face-to-face, the in-person stuff, it's so valuable, and it's something that needs to come back sooner rather than later, because you can't, you can get the information from online, but it's the, it can be sometimes those impersonal or those little conversations before the lecture starts or before the session starts, or as you're walking back to the changing rooms and such forth. So, so then what was your role then at Bristol City?
So I started off initially as I would have been the 15s, the lead under 15s coach. So at that time, because of my pre-existing or my current commitments, when I started with City, I was training Monday, Wednesday, Friday evenings with Bristol City. Game was on a Sunday morning, wherever that was. Tuesdays and Thursdays was, one was a JPL team, one was a grassroots team. And obviously, their fixtures, the JPL was a Saturday morning, the grassroots was a Sunday afternoon. So I literally was running a business Monday to Friday, 7:30 in the morning till probably 4:30 in the afternoon. And then out 7 nights a week and balancing 2 games on a Sunday. So we went in my first day, my first game at Bristol City. I think I've been there literally one session. I ended up with a team away at Wolves. I didn't know any of the players. I had obviously all of the pre-match prep and stuff given to me with everybody in it, with their, you know, lovely laminated folder and all the rest of it. And this is where they all play. And I remember because a lad called Tom Llewellyn. So Andy Llewellyn played kind of 500 odd games for Bristol City. His lad was in that age group that I had, but he was injured. So I got him with me on the bench. And I was like, right, tell me about this lad. Where does this lad play? What's that one there? What's he called? The blonde lad on the far side. What's his name? And then I think this was like 4:20. So we were probably 2-3 nil down at halftime. And I kind of went, right, lads, I've seen enough. I've seen 40 minutes. And I then moved him around into positions that I thought they suited, given what I'd just seen for 40 minutes. Yeah. We ended up winning 4-2. And I know it's not, I know you've got to chuck this disclaimer in. It's not about results. But what it did do was it, as a new coach to the kids and to the parents, they immediately went, ah, right, okay. So he's changed that there, and he's changed half a dozen positions around. And we've come back and we've now gone and we've beaten a team for the first time that in this age group they've never won before in 4 or 5 games.
Yeah.
Maybe. Not that he knows what he's doing, but maybe we'll give him a bit of a chance. It gives you that bit of breathing space when you're then trying to kind of implement your stuff with the kids, because you've got to get the parents on board. And then it would have been kind of during this time that I then had the opportunity. So I got on the A license. And ended up finishing the A license early 2017. So yeah, went from starting the level two to finishing the A in 4.5 years. And then I'd have moved on to be able to pass my A license. I moved on from Bristol City and joined Cheltenham Town. So I went from a Cat 2 academy to a Cat 3, a championship first division side to a League 2 pro level side, because it allowed me to lead a 16s age group that was what I needed to do to get across the line for the A license with the practices that I needed.
Yeah.
And the in-situ visits from your coach educators and coming to be able to watch you and all of this type of stuff. And then did that probably through, like I said, I don't know. I was probably only at Cheltenham maybe a season or 18 months or so before leaving and coming in to set up the Tyrone Mings Academy.
Well, it's interesting that you say that you're called on an ex-pro, just that you're recognised, to be able to, I suppose, really have the nounce or the guts to go up and ask somebody for help, like on that first day. But then may somewhat contradict myself here. Then having the bravery really to then just rip it up at half time and then completely change it and put your own flavour on things.
But I've always been the same, and I was the same when I played, and I encourage it now with the coaches that work for me. Yes, you've got to do it in the right manner, and yes, you've got to do it in the right way. But I don't want to employ yes men or yes women. I don't want to employ people who can't think for themselves or just rely on me to tell them what to do. So if I didn't agree with something when I played, I said I didn't agree with it. It didn't matter what the point was or what the question was. It's an opinion. And I think, you know, recently, and maybe not recently, but the last 4 or 5 years and social media and people getting kind of outraged or upset over stuff, you're allowed to disagree. You're allowed to have a different opinion to somebody else. And if you raise that view and that opinion in the right manner and you don't get abusive, but you have a conversation with people, I firmly believe that healthy conversation or that debate, sorry, that conversation is ridiculously healthy. You know, you can argue whether 4-3-3 is better, or do you want inverted wingers, and do you want your fullbacks to overlap, or are they now going to be inverted now, and are we all going to do this? It's all irrelevant. It's what you want to do with your players in your age group, in your environment, at your level. That's what matters. What you want to do, and what your kids and what your parents want to do, that's what's important. Not anything else or anyone else's opinion around it. And you've just got to be able to say, well, this is my view and this is what I think.
Well, I'm glad that you said that, because it's not just when you start with a new club or a new team, it's not just the players that will test you. There will be, especially at the youth level, and I'm going to assume at the professional level as well, the fans or the parents, they're going to test you as well. They want to know like what you're made of. I've experienced it well with men that I've, with coaches that I've hired to help me with my own programs, and they'll, parents test them. You know, they're looking, Can they stand up? You know, when are they strong-minded? Can they make their own decisions? And you're completely right. We don't want robots or puppets on the field. It's and it's something that you have to become really strong-minded, but it's not just for, you know, coaching football. It can be for any, whatever you're doing in life. You got to have that. You got to have something about you, otherwise people will walk right over you.
Yeah.
So, and I also like that you mentioned there that you'd gone from a category two to a category three at Cheltenham, just to be, and just to prove that it's not, sometimes you want to progress up that coaching ladder or progress. It's not always a straight line. That there has to be some like peaks and troughs, just to that's what, you know, it's very cliche. You sometimes see the pictures on social media.
Yeah.
It's not a straight progression, is not necessarily a straight line. That could be, how did this opportunity come about, and what is the Tyrone Mings Academy?
Right. Okay. So the best starting place would be that I knew Ty from maybe when he was 10 or 11. to really good friends with his dad when we played together at non-league. And then, so you kind of fast forward, you know, and into kind of when he was playing in non-league, and then he gets his opportunity in Ipswich, and then he gets the move to Bournemouth. So at the time the academy was set up, so obviously Ty made his Premier League debut for Bournemouth, and then I think he suffered an ACL or a cruciate injury after a tackle. I think it was in versus Leicester, 7-8 minutes into his Premier League debut. So obviously, if you think of it from his perspective, you're at Southampton from whatever age to 16. You get released for being too small. You're then kind of 6'5", X amount of, you know, 4 or 5 years later on. The pinnacle, if you like, of aiming at getting in the Premier League, and then crash. You get a tackle, you get a really bad injury. So at the time, Ty set the academy up or approached me via his dad with the idea of setting the academy up, it would be fair to say that he didn't know at that point if he was going to be able to come back and play.
Okay.
So it was stuff to do with what if, you know, so different business interests and what can I do, and try to keep his mind occupied. And because he'd suffered that rejection as a kid coming through the academies, or the academy at Southampton, and then he got turned down by various other local Southwest clubs when he was in on trial. We wanted to set something up that was of a really high standard, but not standard in terms of the ability of the player, really high standards in terms of our expectations around the environment and how much kind of interaction that the coaches have with the kids and how much of the end result and ball touches that the kids get, because it's their own individual journey. So the academy that's set up at the moment is all play. So there's no entry level, there's no trials. We have kids that come to us that have never kicked a ball before and don't kick a ball outside of coming to our sessions. We have kids that come to us that also are signed academy footballers, but they come to us on a different night to have some fun and just express themselves and kick a ball around with their mates. And,
yeah.
And we have everybody in between. And what makes us unique is they're all in together. So we don't differentiate. In our sessions, we have 6-year-olds training with 14-year-olds. We have boys training with girls. We have academy kids training with kids that can barely kick a football, bless them, because they're right at the early stage of their development, and everybody in between. And it's our job to make each of them the best that they can be, not necessarily pigeonholing them. And we do that through a variety of means in terms of, you know, carousel sessions. So the coaches will stay, the kids will rotate round. Some weeks we'll put them in together on an age grouping. Some weeks it'll be on a size guide. Some weeks it'll be biggest and smallest all in together. Some weeks it'll be done on ability. We literally mix it up, mix and match it every single week, so their environment is never the same. So the venue might be the same, the five-a-side court or the AstroTurf is the same, the coaches are the same, the kids that attend are the same, because we're fully booked and block booked with you know, waiting lists for kids wanting to join. But they all train with the different children in the same session on different weeks and different numbers of the same children, because we'll play around with the numbers. We'll play around with the area size. So it's different every week, and it's just different challenges for them to allow them for it to coexist alongside anything else that they choose to do.
So is this like a supplementary program to their current team?
Yeah. So we don't do any tactical work whatsoever. We don't get involved with it. So say I've got 6 of your players from your grassroots team that comes to our session. I don't care what you do. I don't care what you tell them to do. I've got no interest as to whether you get them to pass out from the back. Have you got a quick centre forward? Do you go back to front? That's none of my business. That's you, your club, your philosophy, your players, your parents. My job is to teach them how to play along the pass if they don't know how to. My job is to teach them to play through the first line if they don't know how to receive on the back foot, to help the grassroots or the JPL or the coach that manages or leads their team, if we could help make their players better, by to use a golf analogy, put more clubs in the bag, so wherever they are at any part of the golf course, they can bring a club out, they can cope with a problem.
Yeah.
That's our philosophy. So everything we do centers around a ball each. There's individual ball mastery for 5-10 minutes. We do 1v1s. We do 2v1s, 1v2s, player-led. And then we go into, you know, dribbling sessions, you know, 2v1, 3v2 attacking sessions. We finish with kind of, you know, 3 or 4 pitches in terms of games. So everything is smaller numbers. We never do, you know, can we have the big game? Can we play a game? Well, yeah, you are. But you're playing 3v3 on this pitch and you're playing 4v4 on a narrow pitch over there and you're playing 2v2 on a corner pitch over there. So they've got all these different problems to solve, which hopefully helps them put the jigsaw together when they play 7v7, 9v9, 11v11.
So they start at 6 and it goes all the way up to like teenage years?
Yeah. So we've got after school clubs as well, which is obviously separate, where we go into the schools and we provide an after school provision there. And we buy all the kit, we buy all the equipment, it stays at the school, we give it to the school. And then we just parachute ourselves in for an hour and a half once a week, deliver a session, leave again, and the school carry on with all of the kit and all the equipment. So we do that. Our evening sessions are paid for. The one kind of conundrum that I guess we've got to solve is the question we've been asked religiously for 4 years now, 4.5 years, pre and post COVID, obviously, is when are you going to set up teams? When are you going to play games? Official matches on a weekend rather than games during a training session. And we've always kind of reluctantly shied away from that because we didn't want to get into, yes, we want you, but no, we don't want you. Or there's 4 kids that come together and we want 3, but not 1. So what happens to that friendship group? Ty was very, very strong on not wanting to say no to anybody. But so we're a bit of a contradiction because one of our commitments is that, which is we won't play games. We won't ask you to leave your existing team. Another one is that we are very parent and player led. So at the end of every kind of 6-12 week period, we send out the communication to the parents and we actively encourage them to send their feedback back to us so we can evolve the sessions. Because we might think we're doing a good job, but they're the ones that are attending and they're the ones that, you know, the kids sit in the car or whatever afterwards and say, oh, it was rubbish or it was really good or whatever. So we're not arrogant to think that we know everything. So we actively encourage communication. 85% of the responses, when are you going to play games? When are you going to set teams up? When are you going to? When can we? So we're going to have to kind of work out how we do that, if we do. And I guess that would kind of work because we'd have a separate strand. We'd keep the academy for the all play stuff.
Yeah.
So again, to use you as an example, if your players just wanted additional training, well, they'd come to our training nights. If somebody wanted to, you know, if we set a team up and they wanted to come and play for us, or more pertinently, it's their parents that would say, we'd like our son or our daughter to come to you rather than where they are. Well, they can do that and, you know, that's their choice, but we're still running the all play sessions. So yeah. We're not actually saying no to anybody. We're providing something different. And then we're giving the parents the choice as to what path they want their child or children to go down, I left academy football because I believed in Ty's vision that he wanted. I still believe in it now. Obviously, his profile has risen massively in the last 4 years. But when we set this up, like I said to you, he was 2 months into a 8-9 month knee injury. Right. So, you know, we haven't set this up with the benefit of hindsight and a high profile. You know, this is something that was a vision that was set out and we all believed in when he'd, you know, suffered a serious injury at the start of a Premier League career and no one really knew what would happen. So we're genuine in wanting it to be, you know, for the best for all of the children. And because of, you know, where he's reached in his career, he's not doing it for the money. So, yes, there's a cost to what we do because we've got to pay for coaches.
Yeah.
We've got to pay for, you know, we want the right size footballs. So if a child comes along and they should be playing with a size 3, they play with a size 3. You know, I don't want them kicking a size 5. You know, we want the best facilities and we want the best equipment for the children to come to help the environment, you know, that environment that they're in. And there's obviously, as you know, there's a cost to a venue, there's a cost to hiring coaches, there's a cost to, you know, kits, footballs, bibs, cones, everything that comes with it. So we try to operate on, in a manner where, you know, the business in inverted commas kind of breaks even. You know, if it makes a pound, brilliant. If it doesn't, well, then it doesn't.
Obviously, I know every child, well, I'm going to assume most children, they want to play a match or they want to play games. But then also, like what you said, these messages are probably coming from parents as well. And you probably would then go away from the mission that you've set out to do. And then you've talked about how you controlled who plays against who, the size of the pitch, size of the balls. When you go play another team or you enter a league, then you don't have that control. And I know we're not doing this to be a dictatorship, but but then it could somewhat take away from the mission and the service that you're looking to provide these kids.
Yeah, but I think it's in life you have decisions to make, don't you? Right. So at the moment on a Friday night where we are, we've got 25 children that attend. We've capped it at 25 because of the space that we've got. We've got 3 coaches. They pay £6 a week. So that's the cost for the children to come when they block book. They get an A licensed coach. We've got 4 coaches. They get an A licensed coach. They get 2 B licensed coaches. And they get a young lad who's starting on his kind of coaching career. For £6 a week. And we capped it at the number because we didn't want to overstock it with children because we didn't want the outcome or the experience to be diluted.
Yeah.
So we either stay like that and we advertise to everybody, oh, look at us, we're amazing, we're fully booked during our waiting list. But kids don't get to play. Well, they do, but they don't get to experience our sessions, which is what they want to do because they're on the waiting list. So, you know, after Christmas, we're going to take a second call and we're going to employ more coaches and we're then going to open up. So the same time, same location, same venue, but we're going to open a second call because we're not interested in the optics of, you know, it's like you queue for an hour in the olden days to go into a nightclub and you think it's really busy because the queue's snaking around the building outside. And then when you get in, there's nobody in the building. Because you've got everybody queuing on a waiting list.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got infused because of the ripple effect to have the most positive effect on as many children as possible of all ages and abilities. And if we keep the numbers capped and we don't take a step backwards to potentially take 2 forwards, and like I said to you, you know, send out on social media, oh, we're fully booked again, book on quicker next time. There's kids who aren't coming that want to come. So we're then going to lose them or they're going to become disillusioned or they might be kids that don't play football elsewhere. And we were their only outlet to come and play because there isn't any of that, you know, kind of pressure or anything that goes with it. So we're going to take the extra space to then, if more come, brilliant. If that then means, again, perception wise, people walk past our session and go, well, they haven't got very many in it. Don't care. Not interested in what people think it looks like. We're interested in what the kids think.
Well, then you've got the support. Then you're lucky then that you have the support of Tyrone. And it's not just a numbers thing. You're not just looking to it.
Yeah, no, he's phenomenal.
To make the money and things, so it's...
Yeah.
The fact that you can give all those kids those opportunities, and just like with... I even put myself in this in this situation, like where I have my own, you know, coaching business. I'm a director of coaching, and it's evolved from when I started. It's gone a different path to where I thought it would, but it's things always evolve, and it's how you adapt, and you've always got may sometimes be a little bit nervy wanting to expand, but then it's also good that you're able to give all these kids this opportunity to keep playing. And then even the fact that, you know, during these times that you're able to like employ more people, hire new coaches, give people, whether it's supplementary work or it's
and again, we don't pay minimum wage, you know, without going into what we do pay, because that's private between us and the individual coaches that we employ. It's, you know, we pay well, and we know we pay well because we know what other people pay, you know. So we're just, and I'm not being critical of other people here or other organizations, but a lot of organizations talk about wanting to do things the right way, or having the right philosophy, or having the right environment, and you know, paying and coaches and kids and all this type of stuff. Well, we're trying to obviously deliver and walk the walk rather than just talk it, you know. And Ty is 100% involved in everything. Nothing happens in the academy without his say so. So no, he's not bothered. We don't bother him with the day to day running of stuff because he's got, you know, a million and one other things on his mind with obviously, you know, the day job. But we don't make any changes without anything going through to him. You know, anything we send him has got to be a business plan. Why are we doing it? Why do we want to change? What's the benefit of the kids? What's the cost? How long is it going to take? You know, everything is done, you know, properly, for want of a better phrase. He puts his hand in his pocket and he supplements it in terms of additional funds and things that go into the academy, which means the kids get, you know, the best of what we could get them, if you like, with regards to, you know, the equipment and the bits and pieces and the prizes and the stuff that we give away and everything like that. So, you know, it really is something that everyone wholeheartedly believes in. You know, and you can get, not you, I got cynical working in academies, and I used to use the phrase of where, you know, it's the self-preservation society. So you had people that were working within an academy environment that were interested in their own self-preservation, not necessarily what I felt was best for the kids. And I get that's an opinion. And we had a conversation earlier off air about, you know, it's opinions. We can't get upset about the fact that someone has got a different one. Yeah. You listen out and you hear other people's views, and you agree to disagree, or you amend accordingly because someone's informed you of something you didn't quite understand properly beforehand. So we're very, very passionate about it. You know, we get referrals from parents, we get referrals from parents that work in schools that then might have a child that's suffering within the school, self-esteem issues or confidence issues. There'll be a conversation with mum or dad, and then we'll get them booking on, being referred by, you know, Joe Blogs because of, and my child has got such and such. And then, you know, within a week or two, to see them physically change, you know, so their body language when they're walking in through the door, through kind of being hunched or, you know, not overly confident. And then you see that grow and you see the personality come out of them. And that's what we do. We try to get everyone's personality out to be the best that they can be, you know, and we haven't got too many rules within the session. As long as no one's going to get hurt or you're not affecting someone else's experience, well, you know, be yourself. Because, you know, school and other situations, there's rules and different bits and pieces you've got to adhere to.
Yeah, there's definitely now with the way that school is, everything is so structured. It's sit here, keep this distance apart, everything. It's they're limiting, definitely over here, they're limiting what equipment you can use at playtime.
Yeah.
And it's kids need that freedom, and but somewhat still in today's world do need that structured environment. And the fact that they can get quality coaching no matter their level, their ability or their financial, you know, background, it's a great message that you're sending. Martin, yeah, this has been a really great to learn about you.
Thank you.
And the Tyrone Mings Academy. And I wish you all the best for the new year.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me and good luck.
Thank you for listening to the PK Soccer Podcast. Don't forget that you can follow me on Twitter at Paul Kelshaw, Instagram at Paul Kelshaw, like my Facebook page at PK Soccer Inc., or send an email, paulkelshaw@pksoccer.org. I would also be grateful if you could give the podcast a review and a rating and share with your fellow coaches and friends. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.